Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Terry Booth, CEO at Nevada-based Australia's Capital. This episode was recorded in person during MJ BizCon on October 20th, 2021.
Let's start out with your original segue into the cannabis industry. You came from, you know, large-scale traditional businesses and regular corporations. What really kind of made you want to jump into cannabis in the first place in the Canadian market?
Sure, sure. The businesses that I'm still in are regulatory-based, so that was one check of the box that sort of intrigued me. And I was literally sitting at my desk, I tell the story often, finishing off my bets, my gambling bets, and ready to go golfing. I was sort of on coast 10 years ago, and my partner came in, Steve, and I thought he was joking. He was talking about, let's get into the cannabis space. My brother-in-law's got this thing in Calgary. At that time in Canada, you were only allowed to have 4 patients per license. So it was a small business. And these fellows approached us for our money. That was the first thing they approached us for, and I had to go and learn a bit more about cannabis other than what I learned when I was in high school. So went on what I call a pilgrimage. First we went and looked at their facility. It was cool. It was this little barn, you know, beautiful plants. And they were telling the story about how Canada is going to legalize medical cannabis on a commercial level. So you weren't limited to 4 anymore. And had pretty stringent requirements and these high standards, these barriers to entry. I almost think that they designed it to fail to some extent. But so I go on a, what I would call a pilgrimage, if you will, interior BC. I'm literally walking down under the ground in underground grows. So real underground grows, yeah. Steep stairs, no pitchers.
Okay? Actually underground, yeah.
Yeah, it's serious stuff. Wait, right then and there, I said, maybe I'm going a little bit too deep in my research, to tell you the truth. But mostly it was meeting cannabis people, not only the activists and the advocates and the whacktivists, right, just 3 segments of this beautiful space we're in, but also going to dispensaries in Vancouver and on the West Coast. And I expected guys to be sitting around smoking joints and maybe playing video games. bad thinking, because walking in there, most people were older than I was, and they were there for medical reasons. And then I started to study the best I could about the medical benefits of cannabis and learning about it, reading the Herbal Pharmacopoeia, you know, talking to smart people about it. And when I came back from all this research, if you will, I told Steve, let's go. You know, so we stroked the checks, we applied for the license. We were applicant number 69 in Canada, which happened on the same day, I imagine, right? There was about 100, 150 out of the first day.
Yeah.
We are the very first purposeful built facility. Some companies chose to buy chocolate factories and throw lights up, right? Yeah. And I always call those ones in Canada the Blessed 13, because they had their licenses way before the rest of us. But we caught them at Aurora. It was a land grab. Man, it was like crazy to learn that much about the capital markets at that time. We had this crazy market cap. But we were using that equity, you know, to buy other businesses, to consolidate the space. And we even did one that was a hostile takeover. We didn't initiate it. The investors, their shareholders did. They came to us. They said, hey, Aurora, we want you to take this company up because you seem to be doing better than we are in the capital markets. You know? That's a bit of luck and glory, having that market cap and being able to deploy it. And then you ended up with this monster. But the key is this. We know cannabis. We knew the medical benefits of cannabis. And when you're sitting in front of the health minister of Germany, you better know what you're talking about. So at that time, it was all medical. It was about hiring science people. 2 pages later, you got Sheeta Philpott standing up in a convention in New York City saying Canada's going to legalize cannabis. The whole country, right. Federally legal. Wow. So I was pumped, right? And then we had to plan for Cannabis 2.0. We did that very well. I left, as you know, 2 years ago from Aurora. And I'm ending up CEO of Audacious now. And Audacious was born out of Aurora. We spun the company out when we graduated to the New York Stock Exchange. So as we spun it out, Steve and I were CEO and president. And now I spun back in because I don't have those restrictions anymore. And I love this U.S. market. It's a bunch of winners down here. Well, these are winners.
But are you a little bit sad about the U.S. market not being federally legal, in the sense that you kind of have a patchwork system that you have to deal with, and you have a lot of federal restrictions such as 280E and a lot of investment restrictions that don't really exist in the Canadian market?
It's a great question. Number one, the restrictions in Canada sort of are there on the brand side. You don't really have this down in the States. You can sit on 35 steps now in this country and smoke a joint. You couldn't say that 10 years ago. So it's come a long way. Is it going to be federally legal anytime soon? I don't think so. I think they'll probably do something around the medical, leaving the States alone on the medical side. And you'll see it change. Look at Clarence Thomas. Right. He's a Republican. He's on the Supreme Court. He says, get it together. But it doesn't happen overnight. The 72 UN Convention required you to at least wait 1 year while you put a system in place to keep it out of the hands of kids, help with the reduction of the gray market, and have safe product. But you need that took Canada 2 years for that. So America's not even at that application form, right? But you have to take your hats off to these guys and gals that have continued to prosper in the USA with 280E, with the SAFE Act, with the Bank Act. But it's coming around the corner, man. And if you're an investor in the US cannabis space, capital markets wise, every single one of them, even the dogs, are going to hugely benefit once they, put that in place. Are we waiting for it? Now. We're not waiting for that, man. I came CEO in March. We were in one state. Now we're in six. Right. So we have to get our butts in gear. We think we have a pretty special plan with what we're doing with building the facilities and getting a small portion of the canopy. So we're not doing a big CapEx thing I did over Aurora. I don't want to have 3,500 employees ever again then. Yeah. Right? I'll be long gone. But can we build an amazing company that sells top-notch cannabis and builds brands? Right? No one's really done it that great. Right? Maybe Cookie's done a pretty good damn job.
Burner's done a good job.
Burner's a good man. He's a good man.
He is. Okay?
Mr. Natural knows Burner very well from back in the day. Mr. Natural's one of our brands. He's an ordained Rastafarian priest who's grown cannabis longer than I've been alive. He's a cool guy. If you go by our booth. So those brands are going to hit the stream, and he's an organic grower for PTS type weeds. GT, Green Therapeutics, Duke Fu, he's out in Nevada. He's got 52% penetration here in Vegas for a small company. It's amazing. So they're part of this team now. And now we hit this deal with these guys in Massachusetts, this Bell Thur with the rapper weed brand.
Oh, yeah.
Amazingly connected. You don't know. We weren't thinking of doing that because of that. We just were going to go build him a facility. And we got to talk, got to get to know him. And we did this canopy deal with them. So 12.5% of their canopy is ours to grow our own weed on. They like that because we're sticking around. We're not building it and see you later.
Well, I want to ask a little bit about that. So when you were first starting in the industry, obviously a lot of CPG brands were starting to come online, right? Nowadays, CPG is kind of the it's the level that everybody's playing on. Mm-hmm. You can't enter into the space unless you have a fully built out brand.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you at the speed at which some of these companies started to emerge with fully built out brands and ideas?
No, it didn't. I mean, it's smart people. Right, and people that know business need to know that they have to have a good brand. And to build that brand, you need to spend the money. And you need to make sure you hire the right know-how if your ultimate goal is CPG, right? If you're gonna go compete with Coca-Cola, right? Mondelez, right? That's serious stuff. So you had better had built out a brand if you want it to be acquired by a big Coca. We're never gonna be a Coca-Cola, but they may, you may be a branded ingredient instead. Those types of things. So we hired Leah Bailey. She's a CPG expert. She's from the cosmetics world. She was also the CEO of a cannabis company before. So she's, she's got the same, not same, different knowledge than I do, but very good knowledge in the U.S. cannabis space. And she's bringing on some awesome people like Vince Field, who did 56 applications for Justice Grown, right? It's successful. Who cares what they did with them? That's not Vince's fault, right? But yeah, that's sort of a long answer to a very short question, but did I even answer the question? What was the question?
I mean, yeah, you did. The question was, kind of when you're looking at the totality of the market, you're seeing all these brands kind of emerge with, like, again, looking at, say, California, for instance, mm-hmm. during the 215 days. I'm a Los Angeles resident. 215 days, I'm used to Mylar bags and, the dram bottles of the old school days. And now you go and you couldn't tell the difference between a retail dispensary location or, say, a retail cannabis product or, say, a cosmetics product or something else. It's so high end done. The speed at which that happens, 10 years or less.
Well, look at Burner, man. And as I said, I know the dude. I've flown around California from north to south when we were talking to him back in the day. He's never lowered his price of cannabis. Never. Not a penny. His cannabis is in demand. How did he do that? High quality product and a brain that knew he had to be different. And he was, you know, one of the first grow retail. It was always retail, and the growers over there. See, he was the first one to really juice the combination. And he did a great deal on the derivative guy. I can't remember his name. Ed, I think. Ned. And now they have chocolates. Now they have this. And, you know, it just went very fast in a somewhat restrictive tax, you know, burden state for a California weed. And we're there, but you can't not be in Cali. You can't. Well, but vertical integrations, imperative. You need to be in all segments.
Because then you can control your price points.
Yeah. It's not up and down, you know. You're paying $2,000 a pound or $800 a pound. I don't know. Yeah. You need to know.
Exactly.
So if you have if you're involved with at least some grow and you lock down those supply licenses, make sure you're in the derivative market, but make sure you're doing it the right way. Don't blow your staff up. Make sure you're GMP compliant. You know, those types of things. And those are all the things we're doing right now. And it's fun.
Well, and you're one of those CEOs and executives that does it the right way from the beginning. I mean, the way that you originally built up Aurora was the right way. The way that you have now done Audacious, as well as the Alps deals and everything else, is the right way. When you're looking at the way to scale a company, what are some pitfalls that you feel like a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of executives kind of fall into, especially here in the cannabis field?
Yeah, well, you got to scale up and then you got to scale down. They should be synonymous with each other. So when you're in a growth phase, and we did it, we overhired. Are you kidding? And then you go through these dramatic cuts, but you read the book. Right? Rockefeller has a great book on scale up, scale down. I don't know that we knew the right way to do it at Aurora. I was sort of gone for two. But right now I'm back in scale up mode, and that's probably what I'm best at, is making sure that you said something there. One of your questions were with respect to how do you do it properly. You got to empower your people. And you know, if I learned anything, the older the person is in the business community, the quicker they will do that. When you tell, you know, an executive, you better hire your department, you better scale up, if they have experience in business, they'll jump on that. And they'll build these big departments, and great, and everything's going smooth, and they don't have to work as hard, right? That's smart. That's smart. And that's how you got to implore them. And that's why we got a lot of experienced people on this board.
Well, and I'm really curious, when you're talking about, say, Alps, for instance, and you're talking about, you know, building out different types of production facilities for, not just, I mean, take cannabis aside, but building out just general agricultural build-outs, because when you think about farming, and you think about, you know, the general mindset of farming, you're thinking, oh, you know, a guy on a farm with a tractor, you're not thinking high-tech facilities and large-scale build-outs. When you're trying to design a spot, what are some things that you look at, say, for different types of general agricultural products, and how do you build this space out?
Well, we're in that industry, the SDG industry, the sustainable vegetable governance and all that stuff, and we're all about it. Alps came over from Aurora. It was one of their, you know, when they cut back and they focused on core businesses. Alps, they're not building any more facilities, so they don't really need Alps. And I was on the board at that time when Alps left. So we were able to cut his chains, because Thomas was only allowed to grow for us cannabis at Aurora. Now he can grow anything he wants anywhere in the world, and he's awesome at growing anything. He's been in the agricultural business for 30 years. So when you talk to him about farming, look at the Netherlands. You can't farm there, okay? And it's all under glass. The whole place is greenhouses. They cover 70% of the vegetables grown in all of Europe. It's a little tiny country, right? So they know what the hell they're doing over there. And we brought that technology over here, so it is quite different than farming. You've got the buildings now, 18 stories with 54 levels of different plants. You know, that's cool. And that's, you know, that's food, lettuce and tomatoes. If you use a farmer south of the border, Mexico, say, to grow your carrots, and he jumps in a truck, a company does, and they drive all the way to Alaska. They drive. You know, that impact on the environment right there is justification for sustainable. We recoup 90% of our water. We can grow in Dubai or Alaska with these high-tech grass root facilities, so it's cool. How do we apply that to cannabis? We had to learn over the last 8 years how to grow that shit, right? And we did. And we had some excellent growers and excellent cannabis minds that helped. It gives us our entry into the license. I think that's really cool. That shortcut, if you will. And let's get growing some great weed. I just can't wait.
Now, I do want to ask a little bit about the Dutch, since you just mentioned them. You know, Amsterdam, obviously, a pinnacle in the cannabis industry for years and years and years. Are you surprised? You know, obviously right now the Dutch are starting to play around with seed-to-sale tracking. Are you surprised that the Dutch haven't taken a more progressive approach towards the commercialized cannabis industry?
100%. They have been quicker on psilocybin than they have been on plant, right? That's okay. I mean, that's cool too, mushrooms. But, and I think the people, they're very proud people. They are not happy that Canada leapfrogged them. They're not happy that America is winning in the technology races and some of these things that are doing. I do think it still changed. They are progressive. People, were they disappointed? For sure. Slow, right? What did they do? They expanded the number of retail outlets you can have now, and you can buy from different producers. Where before, that whole industry was run out of Monaco, right? There was no, Morocco. Morocco. Not a lot of weed growers in Monaco. So, to answer your question, yeah. So, and they tend to be that way, but they do things right, too. Like, I make an example of just the medical regulations. Germany was later than Canada. They're both working at the same time.
Right.
The German standards are high. You know, EU GMP compliant, GACP, good agricultural practice. You need to have that before you get cannabis into the hands of patients there.
Right.
And was it a slow grow in Germany? Yeah, but now it's big, bigger. Today is the smallest the cannabis industry will ever be. Today, okay?
That's crazy to think of, too, because of how big it is compared to where it was.
This used to be 200 people, man.
I know.
The first one, you know? Beautiful, amazing.
I mean, it's only gonna get bigger, and it's only gonna get bigger faster, especially as more and more states come online. When you mentioned earlier, and I do wanna ask about it, you had said that you don't think that the United States is gonna federally legalize anytime soon. Do you believe that there could be a two-thirds windfall, maybe, in states legalizing it and kind of forcing the federal government to legalize it?
That's what Clarence Thomas has said.
Yeah.
Right? He's Republican. The only reason I think it's not going to happen overnight is because even if they said today they're going to do it, it's still a year or two away. Okay? So it's not something you can bank on. You know, try to tell that to a banker. We're going to legalize in the States. If they were certainly going to do that, it would be medical first, just like any other country that's contemplating legalization. You get the docs on board, it's an education process. We're talking 50 states should have access to medical cannabis at least. If you had issues with it, psychoactive ingredients of THC and whatnot, fine. You'll change your mind too. Texas.
That's true. There could be some, we saw what the Safe Banking Act tried to get passed, I want to say, seven, eight times. Possibility of maybe at least legislative easing on the banking side. One thing that did surprise me, though, and I do want to ask you about it since you mentioned psilocybin, has been kind of the rise of psychedelics in Oregon, California, Colorado. Do you see that, you know, being somebody that grows just general agriculture outside of cannabis, do you see that as the next kind of rush is psychedelics?
Yeah, I do. I see it like I saw cannabis in 2010 in Canada. There's lots of proof out there on psilocybin. It's a simpler molecule. I actually sit on the board of a company called Psyched Wellness. There you go, I give you a plug. And Psyched Wellness is a great company, and they don't have, you know, the red mushroom with the white dots?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's called,
quote unquote, Mario mushroom.
Yeah, that's called Amanita muscaria, that mushroom. And in it, they have something else other than psilocybin that's not on the CDSA's list. And the reason it wasn't, because it was so powerful, these magic mushrooms, Janis Joplin sings about them, that they deemed it poisonous.
Oh, wow.
So it ended up going onto the poisonous food list, and they didn't get hit with the CDSA stuff. And that's this company that I'm on the board of. And it's muscimol instead of psilocybin. So you're asking questions about, is psilocybin going to have a run, or mushrooms going to have a run? 100%. But I do think, because of the simplicity of the molecule, and they're already doing it, it's making the synthetic. And when you have the synthetic, that's how you're going to convince Big Pharma. You won't see Pfizer with a little plastic bag with 6 or 7 grams of shrooms, all different colors, right?
Well,
so
But could you see a market, say, like the Dutch model, where, I mean, they have truffles over there, they don't have magic mushrooms anymore, but they kind of, not necessarily full CPG, but they obviously aren't the dram bottles and Mylar bags of, the say, the 215 California market. What do you see that market eventually shaping out to look like?
In Holland?
No, in general, in the United States or in Canada.
It'll be, I repeat myself, almost like the same, not saying you said it, medical first. Right, medical first, and they have a lot of support, and it's fast moving. The studies on psilocybin and DDT, whatever it's called, and DMT, those things are being looked at as really being very helpful, if not gobbled off a field by laying on your back with the cows in Kelowna. Right, it's a controlled drug, and will the psychedelic adult usage take off? I think so. It's just. It's when. It's not if. You said that they don't have mushrooms anymore in Holland?
I'm sorry?
Mushrooms anymore in
Holland, no. So what they have is truffles. So the way that they wrote the law, it didn't ban psilocybin, it banned the growth of psychedelic mushrooms because of the word mushrooms. Yeah, they have truffles now.
You're right. You're worried me because I'm also invested in a company that has psychedelics.
They have psychedelics, just not.
Did you read something today?
Yeah, no, you can't break the. I believe it's as long as it doesn't break the soil, it's considered legal.
Yeah, well, you even have a little mushroom sign on all the storefronts.
Right, the smart shops.
Yeah, cool.
Which is, I mean, it's interesting, kind of that Dutch model of the smart shops and the coffee shops versus here in the United States. When you're looking at, say, the social use in the United States, California had a couple social use lounges. Here in Las Vegas, you have Nuwu Cannabis Lounge. What does the future of social use look like for cannabis?
I wouldn't say it would look like alcohol, because it's different experiences depending upon how you use it. And if you're in a vape lounge, for instance, or you're in a smoky joint somewhere in Denmark, or sorry, in Holland, there are differences. But that's an old sort of system and all. Have you been? Like, you've obviously been there.
Oh, I go every year.
The little holes in the walls, right? It's sort of crazy. It's just the haze and a very cool environment. I don't see that coming here like that. But I do see the quality of our, I'm talking on America stuff, dispensaries now, the stores, very good retailers. You know, there's not a lot of pieces of crap that you walk into. People know what they're doing. We respect our plant. You know, so we're going to do a good job of selling it. But to have the lounges and whatnot on a social basis just for getting high, if it's smoking, then maybe. But look what everybody does about smoking now. So you'd have to have it outdoors. Is it an edibles lounge? I don't know. I'm a little bit susceptible to edibles. Yeah. I got a little bit, couch locked. So I always think you have some edibles, you're waiting around 4 hours to get high. And then sometimes you get too high. It's like edibles, I don't see them being the same as alcohol, but there is a market for it, man, and it's nascent in the USA. It's so small.
Well, it's interesting, because when you're talking about like alcohol, here at least in California, you're seeing kind of the proliferation of the macro and the micro. So people are microdosing edibles, mm-hmm. and they're macrodosing concentrates.
And look at the draft beer industry.
I'm sorry.
And it compares to the draft beer industry.
Oh,
the craft, exactly. Sorry, craft beer industry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And seeing kind of, the idea that, hey, I can have a nice, drink with 2.5 milligrams of THC in it and have a nice time. Or if I really want to go hard, I can have a dab. What do you see as the future of the cannabis industry?
What's going to be the best-selling product?
Oh, not the best-selling product, but what do you see the future of the cannabis industry maybe evolving into?
I see the derivative industry continuing to grow. We're always going to have our connoisseurs of cannabis that want to have the bud. And I see that only getting bigger and better. I also see derivatives that are broke out in a very scientific way to their cannabinoid profiles. In the future, we will have studied those drugs, those different combinations of terps, CBL and CBG. What does that do for you? Right. And when those clinical trials are done, it becomes a big business. And cannabis, we know it works, man. Right? We know cannabidiol is anti-inflammatory. The studies are out there, and it's safe, cool, right? It's just they used it for thousands of years. It's just the last 110 we've had this problem. But yeah.
Oh, I'm curious because you just mentioned that.
when we, you know, when you first got into cannabis, and obviously when the medical market first started in California, it was, you know, THC was the end all be all, and now you're seeing kind of the rise of the alternative cannabinoid market, the entourage effect being looked at more than specific strains. Is that going to continue? Do you see the kind of the death of the idea of strains?
No, I don't. I tell you what, you always need your good bud, but what we know now, no matter what it is, OG Kush, that's a nice little strain, right? Isn't going to do as good as orange, or if you have a color and a flavor in your name, you're a popular strain now. You know, so, but it does have to be backed with good quality buds. So strains have always changed their names, you know, over time since the 60s. But yeah, it's I think it's an important part of this. If we can get to the point where we're actually not believing in the entourage effect, study it. I believe in the entourage effect, 100%. The PTS patients that we speak to believe in the entourage effect, you know, 85,000 just being studied by us in Canada. So that's all time, right? But I do see it as always having us old stoners banging on the bong. Well, that's a social experience, man.
What's next for you on the docket? Right now we're rounding out 2021. Obviously COVID has kind of affected a lot of plans for a lot of businesses, but yeah. What does 2022 look like for you?
I'm looking forward to it. We had a tough 2021 because I know you got here in March. Not because of me, but same as our other executives. We removed an entire board and an entire management team and had to deal with legacy contracts. This is my 2021.
Right.
So I was just chomping at the bit to get growing the company. First you have to fix a little bit, right? Build a new team around it, and then away we go. So what we did in 2021 is remarkable, by the way. Got into 5 additional states. Over 5 acquisitions and 3 pending. Where am I going to go crazy like I did before? But there's awesome businesses in America that want to, you know, they want liquidation events. There's no problem. You've built a great business. It does this type of money. You know, we're not going to buy any more Tonka trucks at Audacious. You buy them and then you send them to get them fixed. It costs you 10 times what it did to buy it, right? So sorry, Tonka. I might get in trouble for that one day. But if we... 2022 is just more of this, more education, more knowledge. Audacious itself is just going to continue to execute. Right? We have Alpha Strauss and we have Alps, right? Another business unit. He's kicking butt and taking names. We signed a deal in Dubai for you know, how you're growing vegetables in Dubai.
That still blows me away. Yeah, I mean, you're middle of the desert.
I mean, yeah. That's where we need the water from. Tom says, the air.
Smart. Yeah,
crazy stuff.
H2. Yeah. I mean, the air has moisture.
It's very humid there.
Yeah, so
suck it in or whatever they do. Amazing technology. But so for us, that'll be a big business unit driving our cannabis grows, driving our licensing, waiting bated breath on the East Coast adult usage apps. Right. We think we've hired the best guy who does applications in the country. He got Justice grown 52 licenses. Okay.
Right.
And when he became available, it was like, boom. Thank you very much.
Instant.
Right? Because you want those types of people, Vince, on your team. So it's going to be busy. I'm going to be down here a lot. COVID's going to be half gone, let's hope, right? We're not all running around with Google masks on. it's not depressing anymore. It's surreal to me. You know, this thing that we're going to be coming out of. It's going to make a lot of people happy. And guess what? So is our bud.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I think it's going to be a great year for cannabis. Every day it grows.
I think that's a great, great way to look at it. It's going to be a great year for cannabis. Every day is growth.
We would like to thank Terry for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about Australia's Capital and Audacious by visiting them online at www.ausa-corp.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.